We are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,596 of the Survival Podcast. It is Wednesday, December the 11th. We're just a couple minutes late getting started because I'm a little behind the eight ball today. My guest, Charles Mayfield, returning for his third appearance on TSBC, actually beat me to the conference room. That almost never happens. That's how far backed up I am today. But we're about ready to launch and get going here with this. We're going to be talking about two really cool subjects. One is regenerative farming, and two, regenerative farming's linked to health, and in this case with Charles specifically, skin health, with the skin, of course, being the largest organ that you have on or in your body. And so it is incredibly important. Well, I guess we're not going to be on Facebook today because that doesn't want to work for whatever reason. I probably pissed off Zuckercock or something. Anyway, we're going to not be on Facebook today, but otherwise we're going to have a great show as we always do. I'll be bringing Charles on in just a moment. He's a regenerative farmer. He works a lot with hogs. He also has a skincare line that utilizes hog fat instead of some of the usual suspects. And you may wonder why, and I know why, but I ain't going to tell you because that's why he's here. And again, his third time on TSPC. With that, let's go ahead and say thank you to our sponsors before I bring Charles on. KnifeKits.com has been sponsoring this show since February of 2009. Okay? Some people that are probably listening to this show, hopefully with their parents for guidance, might not have even been born at the time that this company started sponsoring a podcast of all things. That is longevity. They also do a discount for members of the MSB. Christmas is coming. What a great idea. How about giving that kid in your life a knife kit, and then you take the time to complete the knife with them? It'll be something they'll have long after the plastic crap is rotting in the dump. You can start out with basic kit knives. You can get raw materials for doing your own custom bladesmithing, anything you want to do, and it all starts where? KnifeKits.com. Next up today is Above Phone. How about you take back your tech from the big tech companies? Guess who's spying on you every time you do anything on your phone and happily sells your information to the government and to any company that wants to buy it? Well, that would be the device manufacturers themselves. That would be the app manufacturers, and that would be the carriers. What if you could just make it all go away? And I know what you're thinking, but Jack, this sounds all kinds of technical. I'm addicted to the Play Store, the Google, or the iOS store or whatever. Look, first of all, any app that you're using on your existing phone, you can use on an Above phone. But what you can do is you can put it in a little jail where it only does what it does when you let it out of jail. And you will find that a lot of the apps in the private app store will do all the same things that you need done without spying on you because they don't get in there unless they don't do that. They have to be open source and reviewable. And then if you're still thinking, but I'm not sure I can do this, when you buy an Above phone, somebody from Above phone will give you up to a 1 hour consultation on the phone to walk you through switching over. And if you're an MSB member, you'll get $75 off any phone at AbovePhone.com. With that, I want to go ahead and bring our special guest on, Charles Mayfield. Hey, Charles, welcome back to the Survival Podcast.
Jack, it's great to see you, man. We're actually coming up, I believe, on our 3-year anniversary of meeting each other John Bush event, Live Free Academy in Bastrop. Way
was
back
that 3
when,
years
so.
Ago?
Yeah, man. Crazy. It will be. Yeah.
Did we meet at more than one? Okay, it will be. Okay, that makes more sense because that's the one Zuby was at, right?
Yeah, Zuby was at that one, and I think Ken Berry was there.
Ken was there.
Quite a few folks.
He punked out, left before the big dinner and all, though. He flew in, showed up, throwed up, and left. You know, that's Ken, man. He's busy. He doesn't hang out enough anymore. He's all important now. He's on the cover of Women's Day and shit. He thinks he's important, you know. Anybody listening to this for the first time, Ken and I are buds, man. I'm just messing with him.
Hey, listen, you're both doing great work. Anyway, it's great to be here. Great to be back. And the world is a much different place than the last time we spoke, which I think was around February of last year. So excited to be here.
Yeah, it is a different place, and it's damn well a different place than it was when we met down at John's and we were in the middle of all these lockdowns and crap. Unless you were in Texas, if you noticed when you're here, we just didn't seem to really care. Like, we're not doing that, you know. But I'm glad everybody else is also not doing that at this point in time. Can you talk about how you got into regenerative farming and then how that led to having a line of products in the skincare industry? Because that doesn't seem – it's very linked, but it doesn't seem like it to the casual observer.
Yeah, well, it's really a testament to how far away from our roots, if you will, we've gotten. But I grew up in a sort of farming adjacent family, but didn't really get a passion for it. So I found CrossFit in 2007-08. CrossFit led me to paleo, and paleo is really, you know, you start worrying about your food and the food quality. I think you inevitably get into wondering where the food is sourced from. And my ex-wife and I published a number of cookbooks in the paleo space, and that, you know, that got us introduced. There was actually a conference in Austin, started in 2012, I think, called Paleo FX.
Yeah.
And it was there that I met Will Harris from White Oak Pastures. I got to know the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And long story short, I ended up at Polyface Farms in Virginia. This was 2013-14.
Okay.
Again, love the outdoors. I've hunted all my life, sports, all that fun stuff. But the agricultural farming bug hadn't fully manifested. But man, you step on Joel's farm in Swoop, Virginia, and I call it Mecca. And so I'm sure you know Joel. He's a prolific writer. It was that trip that sort of got the bug in me, and I started reading everything that he put out. Mm-hmm. And you know, you read, and at some point it's like, I got to go do this if I'm going to learn anything else. And so that's what started in 2016. I call it a micro farm.
Yeah,
we had about 15 to 20 customers early on. It grew to about 50, but just growing meat, you know, beef, yeah, pork, chicken, and so that's sort of how the farming bug bit me. And fast forward 2019, had a really bad sunburn, and had this culinary background. So I was growing pigs. I was using their fat to cook with, fry with. I come home one day with this, four alarm fire, probably a second degree sunburn, you know, one of those real, real bangers. And half curiosity, Jack, and half desperation, I had a jar of lard in my fridge, and I've had this memory, you know, my mom used to put aloe vera in the fridge whenever we'd go to the beach, just so.
Yeah, it was cold and it worked.
Right? That's right. That's right. And so, yeah, that was, so the tipping point was I put it on, my sunburn was gone in a couple of days, which was great. But when I never peeled, that was, you know, if you really want to talk about the light bulb moment, you know, I watched my skin like a hawk for 3-4 weeks and not one stitch of skin ever, you know, peeled. And so, you know, that was 2019. A couple of crazy things happened in the world in 2020, 2021. And I had the farm. I was making these creams, just sort of playing around, tinkering with this different recipes. And I started making little jars and taking them to my customers, you know, just like any old entrepreneurial farmer might have. Hey, try this. Hey, try this. And eventually I got enough feedback that encouraged me to launch the company. And I would say the final sort of nail in the coffin was I took my paleo lens. You've heard this. Your listeners have heard this. If you can't pronounce it, don't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that lens and started shining it on skincare because I was trying to formulate stuff and mix it together. Yeah. And it just kept going rancid and smelling terrible. And I was like, well, gosh, you know, all this bacteria, what am I going to do? And so instead of figuring out what chemicals I should inject into this formulation, I just took all the water out. All of your listeners probably have cooked bacon and you pour the drippings in a coffee cup and they sit there on your kitchen counter for months and never go bad. Fat is by design an antibacterial environment. And so, I fired the water. That's when I brought in a little bit of tallow. You know, we lead with lard, but we use other animal fats in our product. And you know, we launched in 2022. I met you, and the rest is sort of history at this point.
Yeah. I wonder, as you're saying that, how many things humans even in modern times, have discovered out of like desperation. I mean, I've always known that comfrey is good for a lot of things, for instance. And I remember the first time I used it on fire ant bites. I was actually teaching a class, and I had some started plants, and the fuckers got into the plant pots. And so I'm talking about these plants, and somebody goes, look at your hands, and I look down, and I look like those young men in the Amazon where they stick it in the ant gloves as a rite of passage, and they're just tearing the shit out of me. And there was – I had a container full of comfrey growing right there. Mm-hmm. I immediately grabbed it and rubbed it all over my hands, and I never even broke out. Hmm. And I discovered over time, like, if you don't do it instantly, that doesn't – it helps, but it doesn't do that, right? And it was one of those, like he says, desperation, like, shit, I got to keep talking. And they got me good. You know how those bastards are. In Tennessee, you got plenty of them, too. And, man, it works. I wonder how much it's kind of the you got your peanut butter in my chocolate. Remember the old Reese's commercials, right? You know, that's cool that you figured that out. Let's talk a little bit then about lard-based skincare. It sounds kind of crazy, but it really is kind of a game changer, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I like to rewind the clock back to 1910. You know, a lot's happened since 1910, but I like to go back there. And just to set the stage, there were no grocery stores. There were no grocery stores, and most people didn't live in town. You know, we were still sort of migrating to the cities for the jobs. This is pseudo pre-industrial age, but coming up. And so if whether you lived in town or not, you know, if you walked into the general store, right, there were no grocery stores. So you went in to get your nails and your turpentine and your, you know, you went to your bakery to get the bread. You went to your abattoir to get the meat. But
sure,
you know, you had a utility store. There is a 100% chance that you walked out of that store with a can of lard. 100% chance. Tallow is very popular today, and we can certainly unpack tallow, but we didn't kill a lot of beef in 1910. It's a bigger carcass. It's harder to handle. We slaughtered almost
everything. We didn't have refrigeration yet.
That's
so
right.
Shipping was harder. Yeah.
That's
and
right.
It was much easier to pack a pig into a barrel full of salt and have a good product at the end of it. I learned a lot from Jace Townsend's son, where they were talking about how in the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, they got either a pound of pork or three quarter pound of pork salted or a pound of beef salted. And they all wanted the pork, even though they got less of it, because when you salt beef, it stays not great tasting, right?
No.
You salt pork and you soak it and you cook it and it's pretty decent. So that probably had something to do with it too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, prior to World War II, you know, really when the industrial age and mechanization and you said it, commercial grade reliable refrigeration really was available. The beef industry was really limited to 2 or 3 months out of the year. You know, we because the carcass was so big, you know, you could kill a pig in Texas in the summer.
Yeah.
And as long as you got that carcass, you know, in the local creek to cool off for a handful of minutes, and then you could manage the carcass, even if you were a homesteading family.
Yeah.
You could manage it, butcher it, get it in a salt box ASAP, and you were probably reliably okay with that meat. And so, you know, this 1910 and then 1911 Crisco comes out. This is crystallized cottonseed oil by Procter and Gamble that they bleached white.
Yes.
To look just like lard.
Yep.
And so, you know, I like to rewind the clock to there. Also, you know, again, some other things in the 1910s, and I've done a lot of research on this, like there were way more farms. Obviously, most people were living outside the cities and off the grid back then, and everyone had pigs. I would make the argument, Jack, that in 1910, you didn't have a very big skincare market because 99% of consumers, us today, were intimately connected to animal fat on a regular basis. You were cooking, you were butchering, you were hunting, you were gathering. And so, you know, for anyone that's ever, you know, eviscerated a deer carcass or even a rabbit, like you can't eviscerate an animal without getting their fat all over you. And so fast forward to, again, just sort of the lard story and how far removed from our vernacular it's become, that World War II was the nail in the coffin of lard. And so you had, by now you had Crisco, but a lot of people were still using lard regularly, and then they rationed it. And you might ask why. If you've seen the movie Fight Club, animal fat, specifically lard, is the best fat to make nitroglycerin, which was the explosive. You know, all of our explosives today are synthetic stuff. Like, we figured all that out. But yeah, all of a sudden the lard leaves the shelves, store shelves, for 4 years during the war effort. But that's okay. Here's your Crisco. And yeah, it never recovered. We lost a bunch of breeds of pigs. The breed pig phenotype used to be a lard pig or a meat pig. Now, yeah, today it's more a bacon pig versus a ham pig. But we lost a lot of the very traditional heritage lard breeds following World War II as well.
You know, you're making me think I'm going to have to do a whole show on the history of pigs and beef. In the modern world, because there's a lot of stuff to that. Just real quick before we head on, like when you're talking about all this stuff with people using more pig than cow, it made me think of the story that you'll hear if you go down. They call it a cattle drive. It's like 10 longhorns walking in a circle in downtown Fort Worth. You're nodding like you've been here. And they'll come out and they'll tell you the whole history of the stockyards and how it became what it was. Well, there's a railroad they put in from San Antonio up to Dallas or Fort Worth, and then from Fort Worth up to St. Louis, and from St. Louis to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And after so during the Civil War, a lot of guys that went off and fought the war from South Texas just let their cattle go. And they went feral for 5 years. And down in that rangeland, they can live really, really well. They're tough animals. And these were, you know, longhorns, big, freaking badass, half-wild cattle. So you could go down there and just get cows. Like, you know, they'd been reproducing and no one's managing them. And they've gone feral and they're all over the place. But they really weren't afraid of people. And if you brought one into like San Antonio, you could get a dollar for it, one silver dollar. If you drove them all the way up to Fort Worth before the railroad was in, you got $5. That's a long way to move a freaking cow for $4 profit. So when they put that railroad in, that opened up the whole beef market. But that wasn't until well after, you know, the Civil War. So you're getting up into that 1900, 1910 time, and then they still have this limited distribution. That's why Kansas City, Chicago, and Fort Worth are known for beef, because you could get them there, kill them, and then sell them right away. Where like the pig, like the I can't think of the one asshole, that the Spanish asshole that marched through the whole Southeast and laid waste to
DeSoto,
right? Yeah. They had like 300 pigs as part of their march, following them. Every conquistador, every early explorer, as they would travel, they would find islands and throw pigs on them. That way, when they were coming back, they had food. No one did that with a cow.
You can't.
So you're kind of dead on that. There was just a lot more prevalence of pork and lard than beef and tallow until somebody figured out how to make refrigeration work and make it work on a broad scale. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, in the Civil War, you know, the meatpacking industry was, I mean, dude, we could spend a whole episode on pig and meat history. You know, pigs are not native to the United States of America. Columbus brought the first set. They were eaten. DeSoto brought the second. This is all documented. But yeah, they make the perfect exploration travel companion, because you can start a journey on a ship. You might be on that ship for 3 months with a really little bitty pig, right?
Yeah.
And that pig can eat anything. It's an omnivore. It's not an herbivore like a cow or a goat. And they can survive and thrive in any environment. So you drop them off on what is today maybe Anna Maria Island or some of the barrier islands around Tampa. And they just thrive. But both the Civil War, the Confederates blockaded the meatpacking industry, was actually in Cincinnati, Ohio. Huh. And when the war started, they made a push through to cut, because that was the meat supplier for the Union Army. And so that's how it ended up in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. Crisco was actually a response. Procter & Gamble, I forget which one did which, but Procter was candles and Gamble was soap. It might be the other way around. But and they got their place on the map from the Civil War. They were they made all the soap and candles for the Union Army. And in the late 1800s, there was a the meatpacking industry was headquartered in Chicago, and the pictures are insane. I think at one point, and again, this is pre-industrial age, pre-refrigeration, I think they were harvesting somewhere around 12 to 15 million animals a year out of Chicago, right? Wow. And yeah, they started fixing prices on fat. Again, beef and lard. We did everything with animal fat, you know, back in the day. And so they started price fixing, and Procter & Gamble decided they were going to try to replace lard and tallow in their products. And they figured out cottonseed oil made great soap and candles. And so they leveraged up, bought like six or seven cotton mills in Texas, and really, you know, they capitalized this cottonseed oil thing for soap and candles. And then I think it was 1892, your first tungsten light bulb patent is filed. And then turn of the century, we start to get electricity and reliable light bulbs, and the light goes on with them. They're like, oh shit, this candle business ain't looking so hot, right?
Yeah.
And so they teamed up with a German scientist, figured out how to hydrogenate cottonseed oil, and ergo Crisco launches in 1911. So
my understanding, it was actually initially supposed to be some kind of industrial lubricant, and this all kind of went together, and they're like, hey, we can feed it to people. Anybody that thinks it's okay to use Crisco in your food, this is what I say to go someplace they actually make cottonseed oil and look at what it looks like when they squeeze it out of there and decide if you want to eat that. Let's get back to what we're talking about. We'll get you to put a form in, and we're going to do this show sometime early in the next year after I come back from vacation, because I think that'd be cool. But let's talk about regenerative farming and skincare ingredients. And, you know, I love what you're doing, but if somebody told me I'm going to go down the grocery store and buy a tub of lard from a CAFO pig and make skincare products out of it, I would be like, I don't really think you should do that. Because all the toxins are going into your skin. And, you know, you kind of hit on it with paleo. When people talk about clean keto, I'm just like, so that's, you know what that is? That's low carb paleo. Mm-hmm. That because paleo, primal diets, that's where we start looking at not just what we're eating, but where it comes from. And when you start looking at, when you're using fat, whether it's going on your skin or you're eating it, anything you're using it for that comes in contact with you, what people need to understand is fat's wonderful, but it is the battery for the body for energy, but it's also the battery, therefore, of all the toxins that the fat producing entity is consuming. So can you kind of talk about, like, regenerative needs to be regenerative all the way through?
Yeah, I'm really glad. What I say all the time is the swine is divine, but the lard is hard. Okay. So, let's really unpack this. You have a lot more leeway. So again, we've got tallow and lard. We'll talk about those two. They're not interchangeable. They come from different species, but let's start with tallow real quick, because it's a hot button right now. We use tallow in our products, but we'll talk about why lard's awesome. Tallow comes from the visceral fat of a ruminant animal. Now, that's most commonly a cow, but, you know, elk tallow, bison tallow. But it's the key word there is visceral. Okay. So a ruminant animal, multi-chambered stomach, they metabolize all of their nutrition through fermentation, right? Sure. You know, the rumen is a fermentation crock, you know, cow chewing their cud. They're just, and so, from an environmental standpoint, there's an extra added barrier of just because it goes in the mouth doesn't necessarily mean it gets in the body of the animal, because fermentation, you know this, your listeners may too, you know, fermentation does a lot to break down various carcinogens and leptins and proteins that may not necessarily be healthy for us. Okay. And couple that with, it is the visceral fat. So just like humans, all mammals have two predominant kinds of fat, subcutaneous and visceral. So the cap on your pork chop or ribeye or strip steak, that is subcutaneous fat. And that is, back to your term, that is the battery for that animal, right? So when they store excess calories in for future energy use or nutrients, vitamin D, vitamin A, they're going to store any excess nutrition in that subcutaneous fat. Point being is you can, and this is why I think one of the reasons why tallow is so popular, you can source tallow from an industrial, you know, CAFO feedlot animal, and you're still going to get a reasonably quality, fat, just because much like the placenta protects the unborn child, that viscera is, and visceral fat is not a storage fat. It's a, it's like the airbag for your kidneys.
Okay.
So tallow, visceral fat from a ruminant animal. We also use leaf lard. So let me jump to that one real quick. Okay. Leaf lard is the equivalent from a pig of tallow from a cow. Okay. So it's the rendered visceral fat. It's called leaf lard from a pig. Now a pig, again, for, and this boils into why our products are so awesome. A pig is a monogastric omnivore.
Like we are.
Just like us. Right. And so a pig's going to metabolize vitamin D from the sun the same way humans do. Right. Sun exposure, fresh air. It's going to metabolize vitamins A, E, C from its diet, store it in various places. And so pigs metabolically and biologically are exactly like us. But even a pig is not going to store that fat in its visceral fat. It's going to store it in subcutaneous. So the cap on your pork chop or the intravenous bacon fat in your bacon, that's all subcutaneous fat. So, again, the swine is divine, but the lard is hard. You can source, we could source leaf fat from most pigs. I don't source any of my fat from any industrial pigs or cows. But you could, in theory, you could source it from a CAFO pig if it's leaf fat. And it'll be creamy and delicious. And leaf fat was prized as a baking fat. Still is, but no one knows about it. Because it didn't impart a smell or a flavor to your pie crust, biscuit, pancake, whatever you're baking. Because of the visceral nature, it didn't, you know, you've eaten acorn finished Spanish ham or pork chops before. In a perfect world, every fall, I would feed pigs acorns and pineapple for about 2 months. It would be, I think it would be the most remarkable tasting pork you've ever had. But so leaf lard, leaf fat is the porkine monogastric omnivorous equivalent to tallow. Okay. And then let's jump into lard. Lard, subcutaneous, it is the battery of the pig. It stores for better or for worse. So if you source your lard from an animal that grows up on concrete, never sees the sun, probably injected with a whole host of crap because the environment they live in is just beyond toxic, then all of that toxicity is going to be inevitably stored in its fat. Flip that coin over. You raise a pig outdoors. You know, Joel Salatin always talks about the pigness of the pig. You know, fresh air, sunshine, moving around, hanging out. Right. Feed it well. Feed it well. Healthy food, just like a human. Go figure. If a human gets outside and gets vitamin D, eats a good diet, and spends enough quality time with its friends, going to be a pretty healthy human. Same thing for a pig. And so when you do all of that, you are building a fat that is the most biologically aligned exogenous substance on the planet to human sebum, which is the oil our glands produce.
Okay.
All right. So when you do all of that, then the formula, you know, you said it in the intro, our skin is our largest organ. It's often called our second stomach. It eats things. If you've ever rolled around in poison ivy too long, you know, poison ivy is an oil on a plant. Our skin eats that oil and, you know, crappy days are ahead. So our skin does like to eat things. This is one of the biggest problems with modern day skincare is we take very seriously what goes in our mouth, but we don't. Yeah. We don't think about what goes on our skin. So how do I do?
Which is really foolish because you talk to any doctor that spent some time long term in an ER, and I guarantee you he's had a patient come in with some sort of pesticide poisoning. Sometimes this happens with certain, you know, like secondhand clothing and stuff like that, where somebody didn't wash the clothes before and they end up either dead or close to death. Just from a substance they couldn't even feel on their skin. You know, and there was a whole rash. I remember when I was a kid, they were telling you not to take tattoos from strangers, not just drugs, because there was this thing going on where people were actually putting LSD in, like the stick-on tattoos. And even if you didn't put it in your mouth, it still fucked you up, right? So if anybody thinks that you can't absorb through your skin, I don't think you understand biology 101.
Well, I mean, look at the marketplace today. We got nicotine patches and all sorts of transdermal. I mean, the skin is a phenomenal mechanism to get something from the outside to the inside, right? One of the downsides or potential problems with that is it's going straight into the bloodstream. Hmm. You know, if I, here's a good one. Just because I put it in my mouth doesn't mean it gets into my body, right? Sure. Your entire, you know, swallow a string and wait long enough, you'll floss your whole body, right? It's a tunnel through the mountain. And so assuming your, you know, small intestines are properly intact and not, you know, permeable or leaky gut, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. But assuming you have a healthy, intact GI tract, just because it goes in the mouth doesn't mean it gets in the body. It has to be broken down. And then once that singular protein,
even if it gets in, how much, right?
Sure.
Like, so you could take some that's not good for you, but maybe only 20% crosses the membrane, but when it goes on the skin, it's all in, baby.
Oh, Jack, it's even better than that. Here you go. We have a very effective, I just put something in my mouth that doesn't agree with me system.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you've ever had a southbound or a northbound train, you know, we and again, that system has evolved over millions of years of noxious meat, spoiled this, spoiled that. So we have a very effective and fast emergency evacuation system for things.
For all the talk of spoiled milk, no one drinks spoiled milk. No one's drinking, but the people don't get, if you get sick from milk, somebody puts something in it. If milk is bad, you're not going to consume it. People with eggs too, well, how do you know the egg's good? It's been sitting on the counter for, if you crack a bad egg.
Oh, you.
There's no doubt something's wrong.
In fact, you crack the egg in one bowl, and then once you've cracked it, you pour it into another bowl.
Away, right?
Yeah. If you've ever cracked an egg on the seventh or eighth, you know, going into the bowl and it's bad, you're like, damn it. So here's the point though. Our GI tract has evolved to handle toxicity very quick and effectively. Mm-hmm. Our skin has not. Like, think about the most noxious thing you could put on your skin 200 years ago, right? I mean, you've got poisons, you've got this, but
when
you fast forward to today and the thousands of chemicals that our beloved FDA allows to go on our skin. And when you couple that with, you know, most of it's sort of like the shots they want us to take, right? All the testing for drugs and all the testing for shots and all the testing for skincare has been outsourced to the manufacturing companies, right? And so they're testing things to make sure they don't harm you, not necessarily heal you. And that's a very different mindset.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So what do you think the biggest misconceptions are about clean skincare? And how does your product address this? Because you go ahead and answer. I'm right now trying to look for something that claims to be a really great skincare product and find an ingredients label for you. But you go ahead.
There's a bunch of them claiming it. I would say if your ingredient label's got anything more than maybe 10 or 15 ingredients, you're in trouble. So skincare is three things. Okay. Effective skincare is three things. It's a fat-based industry. So every skincare product, whether you're going to CVS or the pharmacy or Walmart. So, oh good. Now you're going to make me put my glasses on.
I don't know if you can read that. I'll read some to you. Water, glycerin, organic cold. Cocos nucifer.
Coconut oil. Yeah.
Xeritol, glyceride, sorbitol stearate, triglyceride sterile alcohol, organic cesium indium, sesame seed oil is what that means, tocopherol, cetyl alcohol, cetyl esters, hydrolyzed rice protein, organic herbal blend. I'll skip all that. Flower extract. Okay. Calendula, okay. Organic leaf of something, aromatherapy blend, sodium phytate, diethicone, citric acid.
Jack, let me stop you there.
Ethanol, you're digging too deep, man.
Yeah. You're digging too deep. This product is everyone is welcome. It's an everyone product.
Yeah.
So skincare is three things. Okay. It's a fat based industry. Okay. So, so here we've got, let's see, I got some coconut oil in here. They probably got some of their seed oils in this product. Right. But there's fats. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you look at the industry at large, 99.9% of those fats are either a petroleum derivative, like a petrolatum, you know, Vaseline or something like that. Or a seed oil. Okay. So cottonseed, you know, oil and various other things. And then you can get over into sort of the plant-based oils, coconut oil, shea butter, you know, olive oil is a long standing, olive oil has got a long history in many cultures as being sort of this skincare elixir, so to speak. But those oils come from the fruit, not the seed, right?
Correct. Again,
back to crystallized cottonseed oil. Like if you saw what they had to do with all the gases and various things to actually create that oil, it would sicken you. Okay. So it's a fat based industry. Okay. So fats are important. Vitamins and minerals are important and pH is important. All three of those things have to come together for an optimal skincare product. Okay. And so they're using the wrong fats. They're also emulsifying. What was the first ingredient in that product?
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
It was water.
Yeah.
And 99% of the time it is water.
And cocoa nucifer.
That's right. So when you emulsify, back to the bacon drippings analogy, when you emulsify fat with water, right, you're creating an environment where bacteria can grow and thrive. Sure. The water is the food. So you have to inject these chemicals in there. Okay, so you're using the wrong fats. You're emulsifying with water, which means you have to put other chemicals in there that can eventually and almost inevitably impact our microbiome. You know, mm-hmm. Newsflash, we got 5 to 7 pounds of bugs living in our GI tract, in our hair follicles, all over us, right? And that we don't want to disrupt that microbiome any more than necessary, right? We want it to thrive. And then you've got the last piece, which is pH balance. Again, most of the testing done in skincare today is to make sure, because again, all these emulsifiers, preservatives, they all have these wacky pHs. You want a naturally pH balanced product. And then I mentioned vitamins and minerals. Let me unpack this one too, because all the marketing is retinol, hyaluronic acid. These are all naturally occurring compounds. Retinol is just vitamin A, right? But we have been, the same hoodwinking has happened in food that has happened in skincare, which is somehow we've convinced people that synthetically grown vitamins and minerals are somehow on par with naturally occurring. And that is so false. Okay.
Yeah.
Because molecularly, it's just a little different. And, you know, our bodies metabolize things on a molecular level. And so,
favorite tiny lie with a big impact is it's the same molecule.
Correct.
It's only a little lie, but it's a huge result at the end. It's almost, but that almost is not the same, and that not the same is not good.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you a real world best example of this. I forget if it was Beyond Burger, one of these bullshit, you know, fake meat companies.
Yeah.
They got raked over the coals and had to pay a huge fine. Because I think on the label it said 19 grams of protein per serving, but it was this pea-based protein that our body only metabolizes about 50% of it. So you're selling it based on, you know, 19 grams of protein per serving, but the consumer's only metabolizing about half that. And so they got in a whole bunch of trouble. There was a, I don't remember what the settlement was or the penalty or whatever the case may be.
The reason you might have switched to fake meat and lost some weight is because you were eating less calories.
You were starving. Yeah. So, you know, again, these three magical things, you know, fat-based, pH balanced, and vitamin and mineral packed. Over here in industrial land, it's all synthetic. It's all plant-based fats. I got news for y'all, folks. I'm not here saying coconut oil is not awesome. I love to cook in it, but you ain't a coconut, right? And so we've been eating coconut for, you know, arguably hundreds of thousands of years.
Correct.
And probably even putting a little bit on our skin. It's probably not the best example to pick on because coconut oil, olive oil, these have been around, but those are few and far between. And if we're looking, if we're talking about this from optimal skincare, what does your skin want? And if your skin walked up to a buffet of fats and it got to put whatever it wanted on its plate, it would preferentially choose mammalian fat.
Yeah.
And I would go so far as to say it would choose lard.
Yep. I would agree with you. And I'd also say it this way. When I first had you on and we talked about this, I'm big on making my own salves. I make a plantain comfrey salve, things like that. And I decided I would take some organic lard and I would make my comfrey salve with lard instead of olive oil. And I got nothing against olive oil. But as a basic experiment, I just took on one arm and put a big swipe of my, you know, there wasn't even anything wrong. Just put it on, big swipe of my comfrey salve with olive oil on one arm and lard on the other arm. And I set a timer for an hour so I wouldn't forget. And then I looked at my arms. And the olive oil one, a lot of it went in the skin, but there was still a significant residue on the surface, which means if it's on the surface, it's not in. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the one on the right arm, and it was barely any, you could barely tell it had ever been put in there, yep. Which meant the skin took it in at a higher rate. And I'm not even putting down the olive oil. I'm just saying one was clearly more effective at being absorbed by the skin.
Well, I would take salves a step further. You know, so lard is an ideal fat for making salves because you need to warm it, right? So it's got a higher smoke point, right? So it's going to be less oxidation. Olive oil is great, okay? Yeah. But you got some really, really tight parameters on how hot you can get it.
There's also, every time I've made a salve out of olive oil, I've then had to turn around and melt beeswax into it to thicken it to where it's not just too oily so that it actually acts like a salve instead of an oil. When I use a pig lard for it, I don't have to do that. There's no wax in it because wax isn't a terrible thing or anything, but it's really not what I'm looking for in that situation.
Yeah. So, I encourage a lot of people, you know, again, especially if you're in a home, like if you're homesteading and don't have pigs, shame on you. Like at least have one because they'll eat every scrap out. You know, they're a more trainable, less predation driven, chicken. You know, chickens are great and they'll hang around the house and they'll eat anything out of your, you know, you get a pig at a young age and train that pig to know who feeds it. Hell, they're like a dog.
They are.
And they'll eat everything. And if they're big and, you know, once they get above about 10 weeks outside of, you know, bears and wolves, you know, a hawk isn't going to come get that big.
No. Right? And if you do have, if you're farrowing your own pigs and a coyote comes around, a mama pig, that coyote's, if he fucks around, he'll find out. I'll just leave it at that. Like, you don't mess with a sow when she's got babies if she gives you any sign that I don't want you here. They will kill you. I mean, flat out, they'll kill you at that point.
If you are farrowing pigs and you have a good sow, warning signs are appropriate for your property because when I was farrowing, I mean, I was down with mama like day one. When piglets hit the ground, I was there. But she knew how I smelled and she knew how I sounded.
Yep.
But by God, if I had somebody else with me, I was like, you stand over there.
You know, we've had dogs have pups and everybody in the family can go near those pups. Mm-hmm. But until they're about a little bit past weaned, you don't let a stranger go near that dog. They're the same. Pigs are the same. Yep. Pigs are this close to not domesticated. I don't care how domesticated they are. And that's why when the pinkest state fair pig gets out in one generation, they start looking like a wild pig. They're just not as domesticated. They're tame. They're not domesticated.
Well, and there's some argument that pigs are the first animal we domesticated for meat. About 13,500 years ago. Now we domesticated dogs well before that, but that was never about meat. That was about co-hunting and habitating and all that. Yeah. But yeah, there's evidence that pigs were, well, and here I love unpacking stuff like this. Pigs are an omnivore, right? Now they're also a prey animal, but they're an omnivore. So everything's a potential meal. Chickens are the same way, right? Chickens are curious. pigs are curious. If you've ever had a goat or any ruminant animal, they are prey animal only. So imagine trying to like develop a relationship with an animal that's scared of every damn thing because it's trying to kill it. So intuitively, it makes sense to me. Well, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world that we would have been able to domesticate pigs first.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking maybe that's something I can eat. And then, you know, you give them some food and they're like, oh, I can.
You're hunter gatherers. Yeah. You kill mom and there's a bunch of little bacon seeds running around. They don't know any better yet. You figure out how to take care of them. Like you said, you can be the wildest pig in the world. You raise it from a baby and it's tame as shit.
And just to address the 600-pound boar in the corner of the room, pigs have this long, storied history of being dirty animals and, you know, don't eat that. You know, let me just put this to bed. Pigs are one of the cleanest animals on the planet. And the reason, so again, rewind the clock 100,000 years back to your point, you kill the mama, there's all the babies there. Well, if you kill the mama and don't cook mama properly, you know, pigs are unique like that. You've never seen pork tartare on a menu, right? Ever. Because you have to cook the meat. So in a hunter-gatherer world, again, rewind the clock 100,000 years, you kill a pig this week, Uncle Timmy gets sick. You kill a pig the next week, and little Sarah dies. At some point, if we're telling stories, we're going to tell a story that animal right there is a dirty animal and you shouldn't eat it. And that story eventually gets codified into a, for better or for worse, a rule book on how to be a good human.
Yep.
Right? And so just to address that for your listeners. You're so good at this. I can't even keep up with these comments. I'm trying to read them, but I'm also just trying to stay in the saddle with you.
Don't worry about them. I got the comments.
So back to skincare, fat-based vitamins and minerals, pH, the industrial skincare world is doing none of those correctly. Okay. They're using, again, in a best case scenario, plant-based fats, but most again, what are they? They're using the cheapest, most readily available ingredients they can find. And so this is why you get all these petroleum derivatives, petrolatum. Again, you said it earlier, former engine lubricants that are now on our skin, in our food. You know, I'm super pumped about this new administration coming in with all the Make America Healthy Again. They're not talking about skincare. We'll get there, right?
Yeah.
I think we got bigger fish to fry. But just for your listeners to understand, if you're hearing messaging from, you know, Kennedy or Callie and Casey Means, I mean, I'm really, really inspired at the level that health has been brought to the sort of the mainstream discussion. If you're hearing any stories about how bad food is, please understand me. Skincare is just as, if not more, toxic.
I'm sure it's worse. And this is why. At least, and even though you probably shouldn't eat a lot of it, if you're eating something, the ingredients that went in it have been certified by somebody somewhere to say it's okay to eat it. I promise you things that they wouldn't let you eat, they will let you put on your skin. Right.
And you're eating it.
Right. And so you're actually doing in some ways worse than eating it because just think of how many medications people mentioned, like fentanyl patches, nicotine. Like it is a delivery mechanism that medicine and modern pharmacology uses right now and has used since time immemorial to deliver a substance into the body. Some guys are on supplemental testosterone. The most common way that they apply it is through a cream. Right. So this is a way the body takes things in, whether people want to admit it or not. And one of the things I think people need to understand, whether it's food, it's skin, anything people are making today, people chase incentives. And if you're a company, the number one incentive you chase is economic. We love our customers, whatever. That's a nice sentiment on a hanger. You pick your dry cleaner up from or whatever. But in the end, it's a fiduciary thing. So all a CFO of a skincare company is probably going to look at is, does this save us money and does the government say I'm allowed to use it? If it checks those two boxes in the fucking bottle, it goes. And that's just reality.
Well, their marketing budgets are way bigger because their ingredient quality buckets cheaper. Are way smaller.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because marketing is easy. Marketing works like this. If I make $1 more than the money I spend on marketing, I can spend all the money I want on marketing as long as I'm making $1 more.
especially if there's fiat cheap money around because they keep printing it, right?
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah. So those are the three things. They're doing it very poorly. And again, a properly raised pig. I cannot emphasize that enough. It's one of the founding. One of the foundational ethoses of Faro. You have to raise a healthy, happy pig. My product doesn't exist. The health of the animal is poor if you don't raise them right. And ultimately the end user, the consumer, whether it's frying in lard, lathering in lard, or eating a pork chop, you know, the other white meat. That campaign started in 1987. I got news for y'all folks. Pork ain't white. It never has been.
It's supposed to be anyway.
It's not. Well, yeah. And so, So we are taking what I believe is the most biologically aligned and efficacious fat, and we are making products out of that that are that we've removed any and all chemicals. Our product feels a little bit different than, you know, an emulsified product. It doesn't have water in it. It goes on a little bit different, but the effects of that product are. I mean, I started this company because of a sunburn. And what I have learned since that sunburn is that our smart lard works on, I mean, name a skincare condition, chronic or acute. I haven't had razor burn in 3 years. You know, I my hair's gotten thicker. Hell, I use it as a pomade now. It's sort of like the Swiss Army knife of skin nourishment. And again, men and women, I hear from everybody.
What about psoriasis? Because to me, it's not just a skin. To me, that is a dietary and a skin issue together.
Yep. So you got acute and chronic skincare conditions. Okay. So we can, the acute stuff we've unpacked, right? Sunburn, razor burn, it's here and it's gone. Even acne in many cases.
Yeah.
Jump over to chronic. Jack, I'm glad you brought that up. So there's two sides to that coin, okay? Psoriasis, chelitis, eczema, which by the way are all being normalized. If you look at the big pharma commercials on television these days, it's all like skin problems are being normalized, and here's the solution.
Control is everything, right?
Yeah. Well, you know you're over the target when the flak starts flying, right? And so I see this, and I'm like, oh well, here we go. So there are two sides to that coin, and I'm always the first to point it out because I have emails all the time from people saying, I have this. What about, did your skincare help? And I'm like, yes. And have you looked at your diet? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting enough, you know, animal fat in your ingestible diet, like animal protein and fat? Like we need all of this. We need all the ingredients. And here's what I'll say. Our skin, our bodies, our entire being, it wants to be healthy so damn bad, right? It just wants to thrive. But 90% of the shit that we put in front of it today is getting in the way of that. And with skincare, it's toxic ingredients. It's here's another one we can pull on. It's over sanitization.
Okay. Like,
which reached a fever pitch following, you know, 2020, right? I mean, we were just sanitizing everything. Folks, I got news for you. I usually save this till the end of the party, but here we are in the middle. I shower every day, but I'll bet soap hits my body maybe 3 or 4 times a month. Now, again, I shower warm water. Folks, running warm water, reliable running warm water is a technology that is more or less about 75, 80 years old in this country.
Okay.
Hell, about half the developed world is still taking cold showers. But what if you think about the utility of warm water, it heats any excess oil on your skin, melts it, and then washes it off. And so we over sanitize, and when we do sanitize, it's with, you know, you think skincare like creams are noxious. Look at some of the sanitizers out there. I mean, it is just napalming your dermis. So
I can only imagine. I don't use it, so I haven't really looked. But what the ingredients on a bottle of hand sanitizer are? It's got to be not good.
Well, listen, if you're in a clinical setting, if you're a surgeon or, you know, right. But the problem is everybody's using that. Like, I'm almost the guy that walks through airports now, like just grabbing everything I can, like give me all the exposure you can give me. Right. Cause I've got this really healthy immune system. Cause I eat well and I exercise and this, that, and the other. We're so germ phobic now, and it's bled over into hypersanitization of our skin. You can look into tooth health and gum health. Like we put way too much toxic stuff in our mouth. You know, most mouthwashes are horrible for us. And so, you know, skin at every level is getting bombarded by way more sanitization than it should.
Yeah.
And back to your question about, you know, psoriasis or any of these chronic issues, I will tell you that I have, you know, I can't make any claims about my stuff. That's how you get in trouble. But from a topical soothing relief standpoint, our creams seem to work very well on any topical chronic skincare. I call it a symptomatic response because there is something underneath that we need to address, you know, whether it's an autoimmune condition or something along those lines. But for topical relief and sort of giving the permission of the skin permission to thrive, it's lock and key with our products. I will say, if you're interested in our products and you do have a dermal chronic skincare condition, I would go with our unscented stuff. You know, we put essential oils in our skin-based food, but I generally tell people, if you've got a specific condition that you're playing around with, like go with our cleanest stuff. It's lard, leaf lard, tallow, and a little bit of honey. And usually a formula for goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. Can we talk about nutrient density a little bit too? We talk about nutrient dense food. You know, when you were talking about like the seed oils, I was thinking, I wonder how many people that are like, I don't eat seed oils, turn around and, you know, rub them on their body because they don't read the ingredient list on their skincare products. But the other side of it is, when we're using the type of fats that humans are supposed to consume, and vegans and vegetarians get really mad about this, but there is no way that humans evolved to consume large amounts of fat from corn or cottonseed or any of this stuff because you can't get it out of the seed without modern industrial technology that's at best 100 to 150 years old. It's impossible. It cannot be done. No one used rapeseed oil for jack diddly crap other than a machine lubricant 150 years ago. Because if you just squeeze canola seed, rapeseed, oil will come out. You will not eat it. Yeah. So we're not designed, even if there was nutrient in it, our digestive system is not designed to extract it. And you would never consume that much, even if you ate a lot of corn. You're not going to get that much corn oil because there's a very small amount of oil in one ear of corn, right? And how many ears of corn are you going to get? How much of it are you going to dump out the other end whole? So how much did you really digest? So we have not been evolutionarily designed to extract nutrient from these seed oils. We have been evolutionarily designed to extract nutrient from the most nutrient-dense food humans can eat, which is meat and fat. So how does that play into skincare with nutrient density?
Well, okay, we'll just go back to specifically lard. A pig is going to metabolize and store A, E, D, C, Pigs are four-legged humans, folks. We train our surgeons on them. We use pig heart valves to fix, you know, human hearts. Like, and if you've ever been in an organ donor transplant situation, like biology really matters, right?
Yeah.
We harvest hormones from pigs, use them in humans, right? So the biology is a spot-on match. So if you, again, you're talking to your nutritionist, right? And they're saying, well, if you eat all these good foods and healthy foods, right, you're going to metabolize and store all the various vitamins and minerals that you know, Jack, need to thrive. Well, if you do the same thing to a pig, it's going to do the same thing, and it's going to store any excess in its subcutaneous fat. Okay. And then because we don't live in a hunter-gatherer society now, we're constantly in contact with animal viscera. We're so soft now, but you can bring in to your skincare routine, just as an example, you can bring in, these animal fats that you would have been in constant contact with, you know, a couple hundred years ago, because you were out there doing the hunting and gathering and evisceration and butchering and cooking yourself. We've outsourced all of that. Okay. Well, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, I don't have time to butcher my own. You know, if I kill a deer next week, you know, I'm going hunting, I'll eviscerate that carcass. Right. But then I'm going to drop it off at the deer processor. Right. And I'm going to let them turn it into, you know, summer sausage and, you know, and ground venison and all that fun stuff. Right. So we've all outsourced this stuff. But when it comes to skin health, this is a way to sort of bring the very best stuff back into the fold for, you know, you and your family. And so that's why we're here. I don't hear you right now.
I was muted because the freaking F-35s were strafing me again. So you're making me think, like, when I was a kid, I used to butcher all the deer. Every deer we shot. And I was a stupid kid, and I liked to do it. So it's like, I get to butcher the deer. But, yeah, I ended up with fat and tallow and deer grease all over my body. And you mentioned, like, summer sausage. We didn't make summer sausage. We made, you know, just straight-up sausage. And you're just mixing this meat, and you end up with this coating of the fat. And do you know what we put in the deer meat to make sure there was enough fat? Pork fat, right? And you literally, like, this old man, this old Dutch farmer, it was the one that taught me how to make sausage. And I talked to him about how the stuff would stick to my fingers almost like a glove. He says, that's when you know you've mixed it enough.
That's right.
And so I just wonder how much interaction the average human being had with animal fat prior to the Industrial Revolution. And the answer is probably a shitload. Because I was a teenager in the 80s. The Industrial Revolution was long gone since then. And I was just a rural kid that lived in a place where people lived on deer meat.
Well, skincare historically has always been an industry reserved for the hyper elite.
Yeah.
Because you had the money to pay someone else to do all your cooking, all your hunting, all your evisceration, right?
And you can sit there and worry about it, right?
That's right, yeah. You know, that's like gout. Gout was a rich man's disease. Well, you had enough money to afford sugar, so you could get diabetes and gout, you know. I mean, everybody.
Boy, that's an interesting one you bring up. I've had so many people tell me that they got gout because of carnivore.
Yes.
I'm like, well, sort of. What you did is you started cleaning your body out, and you started dumping all the toxins out of your own fat load while you were becoming not a fat ass, and then you got gout as a temporary symptom of the thing that you did to your body for 20 years before you corrected it. Because I did too. I absolutely got gout, and it fucking sucks just for what it's worth. But it was a very short, it was like a couple weeks as part of like keto flu or whatever, and then it was gone. But that I remember my grandfather used to get it, and he used to wail, and I didn't really appreciate it because I'd never experienced it. But it was always when he ate like a whole bunch of sugar that it would flare up on him.
Yeah, I mean, there's always an adjustment period, right? Coming off the sugar monster. It's an adjustment period. You know, I'm sitting here telling
you. You stop taking heroin, you don't feel good for a while.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the solution is keep taking heroin.
Back to this crazy, like, I don't soap very often, right?
Yeah.
Richard Nicolai, I don't know if you know that guy's name or not, Free the Animal guy, he's the one that turned me on to, like, no soaps, no shampoos. And, you know, for the first week, your skin has to adjust. And so you feel a little greasy. You feel a bit, I mean, but you got to get through the first week, and you know, it's just like diet, you know, it's just like getting off the sugar wagon, right? Yeah. You got to get to the other side of the tunnel. And once you do, you know, it's, you know, nicotine, you know, it takes 3 or 4 days to get off the physical addiction to nicotine. Then you got all the other motor addictions, you know, the smoking or the dipping or whatever the case is there. Or you can just get your transdermal nicotine patch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Or you anyway.
Can deal with it until you're not dependent on it anymore.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. But
can you talk maybe about the connection between skincare and like broader health issues like hormone balance, overall longevity, anything like that?
Yeah, I would say that your skin evolutionarily is your billboard, right? So it's sort of a light panel. You know, if there's something not right, again, we got to get up underneath the curtain. The skin wants to be healthiest. As far as where it falls in the degree of importance, you know, when your body's stressed, it's going to preferentially shut down unnecessary functions. You know, we see this in like starvation stuff, you know, where mm-hmm. so we put fat, you know, here in the belly, we slow metabolism down. There's a bunch of different autonomic things that happen in the nervous system when we are stressed. And so in terms of the relationship between skin and health, a healthy person is going to have vibrant skin. It may be the last thing to change, you know, because, you know, your heart beating and your liver functioning and your belly and all that, you know, that's going to preferentially heal before the skin is addressed. And, you know, what problems are we talking about? You know, again, most of these chronic skincare conditions that you hear about are a symptomatic response to some fire going on inside, you know, some degree of inflammation, whether that's autoimmune response or whatever. And so I don't know if that addresses it or not. I mean, if you're metabolically healthy, your skin's going to look pretty damn good. Now, get enough sleep, make sure you're hydrated. You know, is it winter time? I mean, we talked before we hit record. I mean, it's 65 degrees here yesterday. It snowed today. Yeah. So I actually got online this morning showing people the snow, and I was like, hey, by the way, it's this kind of, you know, psycho crazy weather in the winter that really rocks your skin, because you never get used to anything. You know, it's wet and cold one day, it's dry the next. It's like, so, you know, given the environment, given the time of year, all that, all things being equal, your skin should look a little greasy. You should have a sheen on you. And, you know, you shouldn't, you know, skin tags and things like that, they're not necessarily normal. So if you're seeing more of those, maybe get under the hood. If you're dry in a particular part of your skin, again, you know, put some animal fat on. You know, let's address it topically. And if it doesn't get better, then we got to get under the hood.
I think you need to do both, really, for a balanced approach, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I would also say, if you're eating well and you still have some skin issues, then let's go topical with that. And
yep.
Topical is really useful. Like, I use a lot of cannabis product as well. But like, if I have a pain in my arm and I want to address the inflammation with cannabis, I use a topical CBD based cannabis ointment. Mm-hmm. I don't pop an edible for that, because the pain is isolated to this one location. I want to holistically address it, but maybe it's sore because I worked my ass off that day.
Yep.
You know, maybe it's not sore because I have chronic inflammation. Maybe it's sore because I worked really hard and my body's recovering, and I want to reduce the inflammation while I recover. And I'm going to go top. I think there's a place for both sides. And I think leaving either side open is probably not the best approach if you want optimum health, which it amazes me. You tell somebody that, you know, you're trying to help them reach optimum health, and it almost scares them away. Like, oh, that's going to be too hard. And I think that's ridiculous, because you keep saying your skin wants to be healthy, where the truth is your body wants to be healthy. Mm-hmm. We evolved over hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. You know, there's debate on when did humanoids actually arise on Earth, and it's anywhere from 300,000 to 3.5 million. Either way, it's a long fucking time. You're designed to exist in the environment that you're in. You did not evolve to live on Mars or some Star Trek planet in the future or some shit. You evolved to live right here. You evolved to be optimally healthy, walking around half naked on your bare feet, killing shit and put it in your mouth, right? And we're not going to live that way. It's modern society, but we should probably live as close to that ideal as possible, because that's what we evolved to do. If you take a lion off the Serengeti and you put him in a zoo, he gets all kinds of chronic problems. Even if you feed him meat, because he's not eating. What does a lion do? The first thing a lion does when it kills a gazelle, they rip the paunch open and they go for the stomach, the liver, the heart, the guts. And then they go feed him a tube of the cheapest hamburger meat they can get. And they go, why is this lion not thriving? Because it's not living like a lion.
And we do that too, by the way.
Yeah, I'm saying we put ourselves in a zoo.
Yeah.
And then we go, why do I have skin rashes? Why do I have growths? Why do I have skin tags? Why am I fat? Why am I tired? Why don't I have any energy? Why is my sex drive low? Why do we have a lower reproductive rate than we've had ever in history? Because you put yourself in a fucking zoo. That's why. And I'd love to tell you that it's not that simple, but it is that simple. And the problem with simple is people don't want to hear the solution when it's simple. Because that all comes back down to you could stop it happening to yourself right now. And that's a heavy weight. And that also means you have chosen the zoo for yourself your whole life, and you can change anytime you want. It amazes me how these people, I want the food coloring taken out of Captain Crunch cereal. Here's a fucking idea. Don't eat that.
Yeah.
All right? We need to have McDonald's fry their fries in tallow. Great idea. Hope they do it. If they don't, here's an idea. Don't eat that.
Yeah. Right?
Don't go to McDonald's and spend $40 for two people to eat food you know is not good for you. That would be, even if you're going to eat French fries, go get some tallow or go get some lard and fry them on your stove for, like, I don't know, I don't really eat potatoes, but I know they're not that expensive even with inflation. I'm pretty sure you can make enough French fries to kill yourself with for about $5.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of saying, let's regulate this away, why don't we accept the responsibility for it ourselves and start thinking about what we eat, what we put on our skin, what we put on our head, where we live, all of it, right?
Yeah, and I will tell you, you can't emphasize enough the what you put in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, here I am in skincare land, but again, it's the first thing I talk to people about. Like, you need to give your body internally all the necessary tools it needs, and those tools come from animal protein and animal fat. Full stop. If you want to eat your Brussels sprouts, great. If you want to do the French fries, that's fine, but the foundation has to be, you know, vitamin and mineral rich animal based proteins and fats. And then from there, you know, the world's your oyster, chuck it however you want, but that is foundationally sleep, hydration, and quality ingredients going in your mouth are the base level for optimal skincare. And then, you said it, and I'll agree. Like, if you're still having issues, or again, because we've outsourced all of the acquisition of said protein and fat, right? So I can certainly get on board with topically having a little bit of fun with our product, or, you know, there's a bunch of great tallow brands in the market as well. So that's a good way to get both sides of it. But foundationally, absolutely, animal-based fat and protein and copious amounts of it. Yeah, I dare you to overeat animal fat and protein.
You can't do it. You know, just, you were saying, I was just thinking, like, one of my go-to red meats now has become brisket, because it costs less than supposed cheap cuts. And if I, like, my wife's like, I want pot roast, I get brisket. I don't go get chuck. The chuck costs twice as much, and the brisket tastes better cooked as a pot roast. But you're supposed to smoke a brisket. You do whatever you want. So my thing with that, though, is there's so much fat in brisket. You know, you make a brisket into a pot roast, and the point is the beautiful thing for that. It's got all that visceral fat.
I was going to say, do you separate the point and the flat?
The flat does other things, right? So you make that point, or sometimes they'll sell the point for less than the flat, which is just
crazy.
Bonkers to me.
Crazy.
And you slow cook that, and then you know, it just falls apart. You go in there with a spatula, you cut a piece out, and you think, well, that ain't going to be enough, and you eat that. And you think, I can eat more. And what we've realized is, yeah, but don't. Just give it 10 minutes, and if you want more. And 10 minutes later, you don't. Like, as soon as your body actually starts to absorb that, you're like, I'm good now. I don't really want to eat anymore. And if you do eat more right away, because you can get it in before your body starts absorbing it, then you're like, why did I do that? You know?
If my one meal of the day, I don't do a one meal a day every day, but if my one meal a day is brisket, I eat it fast, because if you eat it slow, you're going to fill up so fast.
It shuts you down, you know?
It's only 10 minutes. It's only 10 or 15. Like, that bloated, meat sweats feeling, it's only around for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And go for a walk.
Go
for a walk.
Just general health advice. Pretty much every morning when I get up, the first thing I do is put the coffee on. And then I take the dogs for a walk. And the I'd use a French press. So, you know, the hot water is ready to pour after we make about three laps around the property, which is about a 1 mile walk. I don't feel like, well, you know, you're not getting that heavy of a workout. I'm not trying to get a heavy workout. No. All I'm trying to do is get my body moving before I put any food or drink in it and get my mind moving before I sit on my ass and tell everybody off and shit post on X, right? Like, I want to do something functional before I go back to being sedentary for a time with my work. And like, just that alone has made a tremendous difference in my life, in my productivity, in my health, emotional, spiritual, and physical. Yep. By doing something, go do, yeah, well, I work really early. Get up 10 minutes earlier, walk around the block, and then get ready to go to work. Like, you don't have to, you don't have to pound it out. I'm not saying it's not a place for it, but you don't have to pound it out in gym to derive a benefit that will last all day long just by getting up and doing something. And people are like, well, I have to have my coffee before doing anything. Then you ain't healthy, bro.
No.
No, you ain't healthy, because when somebody breaks into your house at 4 o'clock in the morning, you're going to grab your sidearm and say, hold on a second. I'm going to have to get some coffee before I shoot you. Please don't rob me and don't leave, right? I mean, that's just, it's for, and if you were that way 200 years ago, you're dead. If you're camped out, right, with your hunting party, and a mountain lion comes in, and you can't function without coffee first, chomp, right? Like, we're not designed to be what we've become. That's why we're sick. It is by design, but it's also by lifestyle.
Well, yeah. I mean, 100 years ago, if you got up in the morning and wanted to go to the bathroom, you were walking outside anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people forget about that. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty big convenience that most of our master bedrooms are attached to a place to take a leak at 3 o'clock in the morning. Right. Especially if you live in a place where it snows.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah.
My dad told me, and I don't think this is one of the, you know, I walk to school uphill both ways or some shit. Now, I think this was pretty legit. He said they didn't have a bathroom till sometime in the early 60s.
Yeah.
They just had an outhouse.
Yeah.
And when you look
at no running hot water,
built, I think, in 1889, the house they lived in. And if you looked at the bathroom, you could clearly see that it was added on, that somebody built it from the outside and then cut a hole in the wall to make a door. Like, it was not part of the original house.
Oh, yeah, and probably had to plumb from a completely different direction, because there's indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely retrofitted. The one thing about this place is it had a basement, which made all of that way easier to do as
they
plumbing
true,
into it.
True.
But I'll also tell you, there was no septic tank. Right. No. There was no sewer. The pipe from the shitter went into what's called a stripping hole from old strip mining. And the pipe just dumped out into this giant hole. Somehow nobody died or got sick, and it never built up because there was so much vegetation where this output was. But the only reason I even remember that is I remember one time they were worried about a clog or something. And my grandfather said, go out there, and he said, find a spot. And I was standing, because I'm going to start flushing the toilet and yell at you. Let me know if water comes out of it, right? And I'm like, yeah, it's coming. All right, come back in. Like, I think people are just.
That's so, one old person ago.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
One old person ago.
Yes, yes. That's crazy. Two generations.
Two retirees ago.
Yep.
120 years.
Yep.
Two retirees ago. It's crazy. Yep. And, you know, again, I'm loving the journey that I'm on. You know, I'm having this conversation about lard all the time and talking about pigs. But I mean, it's just fascinating. Like, you want to talk about the animal that was the staple of our exploration and thriving globally. It's the pig. And it's just like, And you know, even, you know, I live in the Southeast, and lard, I mean, everybody's great grandmother knew lard, and it's just like, it just blows my mind. It's hilarious. But listen, I know you probably got to go. I really appreciate the time. It's great to see you. We should definitely unpack meat history in the United States one day. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, before we wrap up, go ahead and tell people about your skincare line and where they can find out more about it and get a hold of it. And if somebody ordered it today, would it show up before Christmas?
Oh, if you ordered it today,
maybe.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah,
probably maybe so.
I have put it out in the universe that we're gonna, you know, shipments that leave by the 15th are probably, you know, again, where are you in the U.S. You know, getting up in that northeastern or northwestern corner.
You're gonna need forget bus. About it.
Yeah, but no, our website is farrow.life, and then if you /survival. It'll throw you right in our shop, and there's a 20% discount for your listeners.
Cool.
You were our first podcast interview, by the way.
Oh, okay.
You were my very first, which I was going through the logbooks, but yeah, that's our website. We've got a handful of products: skin food for the neck down, face food for the neck up. We have a CBD elixir. You mentioned you use CBD. We've got a sublingual elixir that's, quite frankly, is fantastic around the holidays just to keep stress down. But it supports skin health from the inside out and the outside, and the topicals are from the outside in. And then we have an Epidermis product, sort of portable, packable. And then our last, we just launched this past year, our goat soaps, greatest of all time. You take goat's milk and our smart lard, and it's an absolute formula for skincare success. And so I mentioned I don't soap very often, but when the pits and the privates get a soap job, I'm using our various soaps there. They're fantastic. And so that's our website. And if you get there and you can enter the promo code survival, and that'll get you 20% off.
So one thing I'd like you to explain to people too, though, because if they're used to buying, you know, Nutricena or whatever the hell it's called, they may look at your prices and get a little bit of sticker shock.
Sure. CeraVe.
CeraVe. That's what my wife's crap she uses. And I've tried, and it just right through. So there's things you pick your battles in a marriage, and I know mine are. But what I was surprised with when I tried your product is how long a small amount lasts because of how little that you actually use. So did you kind of talk about that specifically with some of the product that's more of like rub it everywhere type?
Yeah. And I've got a product right here. So I'll give your listeners a demonstration, but yes, a little of our stuff does go a long way. I would also say for prolonged use over time, you need less of our product. And I can say that as one of our longest standing users, but most of our subscribers, you can subscribe to our products for an additional savings. Most of our subscribers are on a bi-monthly or quarterly shipment. And so whether I'm using face food or skin food, here it is. I'm going into the jar and Jack, I'm sure you've done that. I'm putting a pea size on my finger and then I rub it into my hands.
Yeah.
And then from there, whether it's on my face or elbows, I'll put it on my face. And I'm always hyper lathered. A little tough with all this podcasting equipment on.
Yeah, but
that's generally my sequence of events. So if it's my legs that are dry, or my elbows, or my hands, it starts on the finger, it goes to the hands, spread it around the hands, and then take it to wherever you want. But yes, we are pricier than most tallow products. You know, the swine is divine, but the lard is hard. It's a little more difficult. You know, one of the founding ethoses again of our company is highlighting all the benefits of regeneratively raised, high animal integrity, pastured pork. And regrettably, you know, far few pigs are raised in that manner in this country. I'd certainly like to change that.
Yeah.
And so, that's the website. There's the discount code. Actually, it's survival, not survivor. I just want to make sure.
I went to survival and it went to where it was supposed to.
Did it work?
Yeah, it looks like it worked.
I sent you the link earlier just to make sure.
I'll make sure that is the link in the show notes for everybody. Yeah. And for y'all watching the video, while we're live, it won't work. You have to wait about an hour after we finish. But if you're watching it in the future, down there is a link, the first link in the video notes. It'll take you over to the audio side. And you can listen to the audio version of it. You can find all our stuff. And you'll find links for everything we talk about on every episode like that. Real quick before you go, let's lightning round 4 comments and questions from people I've starred while we're doing this. Fred says Fred is female. I am a female 73. I use pure nicotinamide mixed with water and water-based lotion. Can I add pig lard with it, or do I omit the lotion if I use lard?
Hmm.
I don't know what that substance is.
Yeah, I mean, my general, and again, not all lards are created equal. I would discourage you from trying to take lard and mix it in with an existing product.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talking about active ingredients, that's niacinamide.
Niacinamide.
Yeah. If she's interested, maybe take lard and mix the niacinamide in with that. If that's your active ingredient,
yeah.
For whatever it is that you got going on, I do believe lard is a fantastic carrier oil. Again, to get some exogenous, a nicotine or a testosterone or any other cream, if you want to get it inside your body, lard is a great carrier oil. So,
David Hosfield, and I can attest to that. I've tested it. David Hosfield says, do you have any thoughts on ingesting cod liver oil as part of a daily regimen? I mean, it's an animal fat, but is it really cod liver? I'd be really careful where you source it from.
That's exactly right. Yeah. With cod liver oil, I'd say it's down to the sourcing, just like with lard, right? You could in theory be ingesting lard every day as well. But, with cod liver oil specifically, there's a lot of, nefarious brands out there. I would say eat your sardines.
Yeah.
If you want cod liver oil, just eat you a can of sardines every day. That's probably a way more bioavailable way to get it.
I would agree with that. I would also say read your ingredients. It should have fish, salt, water, and maybe olive oil. That's what it should be. And if it has anything else, other than, I got no problem. One of the sardine brands I get in the teas has things that have peri peri pepper and stuff like that. I'm not saying that, but if it has soybean oil or cottonseed oil or a word you can't pronounce, you probably don't consider it a sardine anymore. Not really a question, but hey, Alabama says if we don't buy it, then we'll keep making it. Call the company and tell them why you don't buy their product. And your absence is sufficient. If enough people stop going to McDonald's, they might actually do a market survey and find out why people stopped coming. And if they did that and they found out that, hey, people don't want seed oils, within a few months, you would see an advertisement with a clown telling you how they don't use seed oils anymore. I mean, every human responds to market incentive. And I don't care how messed up we are, they still do it. We're messed up in the incentive we're giving them. Same guy says, what about urea? It's in high-end skin products. I did not ever know that.
Yeah, there's actually a whole urea, rub your own piss on your skin thing going on now. My response to him is I haven't looked at the studies. I know there are people that swear by it. I'm having a hard enough time convincing people to put lard on their skin. I'm not about to try and mix it with piss. So I do think there's probably benefits, but every one of these damn studies, they go into it, with the result they want, and then they finagle the study to show it. That's what is Salatin always say? You can be a nudist and you can be a Buddhist, but you can't be a nudist Buddhist. So urea and lard is a little bit of a nudist Buddhist thing for me. But if for anyone out there that wants to, give yourself that golden shower. You're more than obliged, but I'm going to stick to the lard.
All right, man. Well, look, bro, I appreciate you being with us today. Let's get that form filled out. We'll get Dorothy to book you sometime toward the end of January. We'll get you back on and talk about the history of beef and pork in America. And with that, have a great day. And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jack. And certainly thanks for everything you do. And please give Dorothy my best.
I will. All right, guys, real quick, before I finally wrap up here, I want to thank you for being with us today. I want to remind you one of the ways you can help support this show is do your online shopping at tspaz.com. Item of the day is the same one that I had for you yesterday. I'm glad Charles doesn't hate on olive oil because it is one of the few non-animal fats that I use, and I use it in cooking quite a bit, and I use it on salads as a drizzle and things like that. You want to get really good quality olive oil, and you want to check the back, and it should say olive oil and nothing else. But this is an olive oil bottle, and I got it because I broke three at least, if not four, ceramic dispensers that I thought looked really cool, but clearly I'm not capable of not breaking them. And so I looked for one made out of metal, so if anything, it might spill everywhere, but it wouldn't break anymore. I found this made by a company called Olietta. And they're stainless steel. They have the top is basically an integrated funnel. So you just pour the stuff right in it. The stopper has a breather tube and I call it like a fallback tube in it as well. So when you pour the oil, the little bit of residue you have goes back down the funnel and back in the bottle instead of all over the side of it, and it doesn't make a ring of oil on your countertop or whatever. And it just looks great. They come in four sizes. It would make a great gift, and they're all under $20. Like, you're not going to burn a 20 on any one of these, even with a little bit of sales tax on it. So check these out. And remember, I just put out a huge exhaustive list for Christmas gifts as well. You can find that at the Survival Podcast. And I wanted to let you guys know something about the website, because whenever you change anything, people get all out of sorts and what have you. We made a pretty simple but significant change to the website today. So traditionally, we have had the entire post visible on the site, and we put it down to basically summaries today. So that changed the way it looks a bit. And I wanted to let you know why we did that, because it might be beneficial to you. I mentioned this week, we found a new service called Pod Snacks, and it ain't got nothing to do with food. What it does is you follow podcasts, and it sends you a summary the day after the podcast is published. And so what I've started doing is adding the Pod Snacks notes to the episodes the day after they come out. And you can see, if you're a YouTuber, this could actually be cool, because it could help you set up chapters in YouTube as well. But it gives you a very good, like, summary overview. And I did it as a marketer, because that's all yummy content for search engines beyond my basic notes that I used to use an episode with. So I just wanted you to know that we made that change. And if you're a content creator yourself and you're a podcaster and you're putting a podcast out, as long as, from what I can tell, they're pulling from Apple Podcasts. And if you're a podcaster and you're not an Apple Podcast, I don't know what you're doing. So as long as you're in there, you should be able to find your podcast, and you should be able to do this for yourself. And if you're following other podcasts other than mine, and you always should listen to mine first, but seriously, if you are and you want to kind of know which episodes you want to listen to, or sometimes you're not going to listen to an episode, you still want to get some information from it. This is a really cool service. It's free to use for up to 10 podcasts. They're not a sponsor. I don't have any kind of agreement with them. I am going to reach out and see if they want to do something, because I just like what they're doing. But I'm only telling you this because, one, we changed the way the site looks a little bit, and that gets people all in a tizzy. So now you know to expect it. But the other reason is just because I think it's a cool thing, and I will tell you about cool things, even if I don't get any kind of kickback for doing it, because I think you need to know about cool things. Anyway, with that, tomorrow will be an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. Then we'll have a Friday flashback. Next week, we'll do it all again. We're on regularly scheduled programming until the week that runs into Christmas Day. That whole week, I am gone, and I won't see y'all until the 2nd of January. I take that time, and I shut down every year. But up until then, we're going to have regularly scheduled sailing all the way through. And here's the thing. I take a lot of time off this time of year. I know. I hope you guys understand why. But, you know, make the most out of the time you're going to have off in December, because you don't get jack crap until spring break. Maybe President's Day is about it, or MLK Day if you get that off. It's just straight work for the next quarter when we go back to work at the beginning of the year. So enjoy the time off. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with the Expert Counsel Show.
They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.